This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to John Eastman, who's a professor of law at Chapman University and is the lead attorney in the case of David Horowitz et al. Versus L.A. County, which we're going to talk about right now. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Tell us just a little bit about your background and how you got involved in this case.
Well, in addition to teaching at Chapman Law School, I run the Claremont Institute Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence, which is a public interest law firm devoted to reviving the principles of the American founding in our law, and particularly in the constitutional law cases that the various courts consider.
Okay, and then how did you end up working on this case?
Well, this case came to my attention because of the news. We looked very closely at it. We looked at both the federal and state California constitutional provisions prohibiting hostility toward religion, which we think is at issue here. But we also had been involved in some recent litigation, taxpayer litigation, and are well aware of the statutes here in California that prohibit state officials and local officials from wasting taxpayer funds.
So essentially, we're going to talk about it more in more detail. The two bases on which you're bringing this suit are that it's hostile to religion and that it wastes taxpayers' money.
Exactly, and the taxpayer waste claim is tied pretty significantly to the pending citizen initiative. What's going to happen is the county's going to spend $700,000.
We're talking about Los Angeles. Let's back up a little bit. In 1957, Kenneth Hahn, the father of the current mayor of the city of Los Angeles, designed the seal of the county of Los Angeles, and it's been in place since then. And what is it that who found objectionable recently?
Well, in May, a letter from Ramona Ribston and two other members of the executive board of the ACLU Foundation of Southern California sent a letter to the county saying that the mere presence of the cross in the county seal was, in their view, unconstitutional, and if it wasn't removed post-with, that they were going to file suit.
Right.
The county council provided a memorandum that, in my view, was extremely skewed and demonstrated a complete lack of knowledge of the current jurisprudence.
What was the essence of that, what you saw as an inappropriate brief?
Yeah, the Supreme Court has been very clear, and the lower courts have been very clear in drawing a line. If you have a government symbol that exists solely of a religious message, then that's going to be unconstitutional, an establishment of that religion. But if your message is merely reflecting the historical origins in the area, and it includes one of many symbols that it happens to be religious, then that's a permissible acknowledgement of the actual history of the place.
Let's try to focus on what's the essence of this case, I think, is whether symbols are solely religious, primarily religious, not religious, and what the continuum is and how it's established.
Well, this symbol is clearly religious, but it is not designed to foster the government's endorsement or establishment of the religion. It's designed to acknowledge the role that particular religion, Christian religion here, played in the founding and development of Los Angeles County.
So the rule is that the government may not establish religion, but that may not necessarily mean cannot use religious symbols in its activities.
Exactly, and we use them all the time. And one of the things that struck me most is you go down the hallway to the County Hall of Administration where the big hearing room is. The major documents of Western civilization, including all of the documents of the founding both of the United States and of California, are there on the wall of the hall. And it includes the Declaration of Independence, which is reference to that all men are created equal, that we are endowed by our Creator, capital C, with unalienable rights. You look at the Magna Carta, you look at the California's Constitution, which in its preamble acknowledges Almighty God and asks Him for blessings of liberty. I mean, all of these things are part and parcel of the development of this nation and this region and this state. And the refusal to acknowledge that would itself amount to a hostility toward religion, when at the same time we're acknowledging all of the other historical accoutrements of the area. We've got Perletta the cow, and we've got the goddess Pomona. You know, I mean, these things actually reflect symbolically the cultural heritage of the area, and the target for removal, the one Christian symbol, is in fact hostility toward Christianity.
Okay, let's focus just a little bit on what Thomas Jefferson wrote in 1776, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. wasn't that a reflection of his 18th century deism and is really not the same thing as, quote, Christianity?
Well, Thomas Jefferson was, of course, not writing for himself. He was writing for a new nation.
Right.
And he has said, you know, he says in a number of his letters that he was trying to reflect the common attitude at the time.
Right.
And so I don't think you can read into that his own, you know, deism. I think you have to read into that the accurate reflection of this notion that our rights come not from government, but from a higher authority. And then when you translate that to Los Angeles County and say, wait a minute, who actually founded the area? You know, why do we have a mission? You know, why do we have every fourth grade school kid working on missions? Because it's an acknowledgement of the role that Christian missionaries played in the development of the region.
Okay, before we get talking about missions and their images and their history, I wanted to focus on what you were just talking about that our freedom, essentially, that our rights come from what you called a higher authority. The President of the United States, the recently re-elected President of the United States, as I understand it, and I think I've seen him say it, but it's certainly been said about him, believes that freedom, which is what is the spread of which is what he bases his foreign policy on, is a God-given right of all humanity. Are we in agreement? Are the three of us in agreement that that's what he says and believes?
Yeah,
and
I think so. And
okay.
I think that's what the founders were acknowledging as well. I mean, and it derives, you know, the notion that all men are created equal, which is kind of the foundational principle, gives us as a corollary that because we're equal as human beings, you know, none of us are capable of ruling other human beings without their consent. That's slavery, and it took a long time to bring that issue in accord with the principles of the Declaration of Independence. But this whole notion that we have to have government by consent, that government does what we tell it rather than the other way around, is a corollary of that proposition of equality. Because if we're all equal, then you can't have some ruling us without our consent. You can't have them taking our rights away without our consent. All of these are corollaries of that fundamental principle. And we're not equal in, you know, basic things, in height or speed or intellect. We're equal in one, you know, that none of us are gods and none of us are beasts, and that in this hierarchy of nature, you know, what makes us human beings as distinct from other things, is what makes us equal and what makes the particular kind of governmental institutions we have flow as a necessary corollary. And it's that acknowledgement of that relationship that, you know, with our Creator that is at the core of our founding principles.
How does that fit in with currently accepted in scientific communities ideas of cosmology and biological evolution, which say that the universe happened and evolution happened, and here we are?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've actually looked at some of the latest scientific trends, and more scientists are coming to the conclusion that they actually don't know the initial steps of this. They can't prove it one way or another. And there's a new movement called intelligent design that, looking at these questions from a scientific perspective, down at the molecular structure, is finding in the design of the basic building blocks of life something that looks uncannily like things we have engineered in our computer science world, and that they're coming to the realization that this would not have happened by accident.
All right, well, let's maybe at another time we can delve even more deeply into that, but let's try to bring it back up to the political level and ask the political religious interface level and ask whether, even after acknowledging that rights come from a higher power, what's the best or proper or acceptable way for humans to figure out what the will of that creative power is?
Well, Thomas Jefferson, I think, points the direction here. At the very first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, he makes an appeal to nature and to nature's God, or to put it in our language today, both to reason and revelation. And, you know, the notion that we can get it right.
I'm
all
sorry,
the time.
Where was the revelation in that nature and nature's God?
Nature's God.
Nature's God is revelation?
I mean, that's what Jefferson's talking about. And he's making, you know, nature is, you know, the ability that you know, we understand nature through
reason.
The discourse of human reason.
Right.
And then nature's God is, you know, the God of all nature, that also tells us the same thing through revelation.
But then how do we authenticate revelation?
Oh, you know, that's a very hard question. And, you know, philosophers since time immemorial have been trying to figure that out.
Right. But
one of the things we do is we look at it, understanding that the source of both reason and revelation are the same, And so if our reason has led us in ways that are contrary to a particular claim of revelation, we might start looking at, you know, with greater suspicion at the particular claim.
Okay, let me try to be more particular then. If a certain clergy person in a certain country has a revelation from God that America must be destroyed, and a clergy person in the United States has a revelation from God that Islamic fundamentalists must be destroyed, who's right?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a few years ago here in Los Angeles County a case of a woman arrested for prostitution. She claimed that she was a descendant of an ancient Egyptian goddess, and that in order for people to be saved in this particular
case, I think I remember that case. They had to pay her money and have sex with her.
Yeah, in order, had to have sex with her, and you know, and pay $100 into the contribution basket.
Right.
You know, I mean, let's just—it's contrary to our reason that such a thing.
Well, no, her argument, but I think let's take that case. She was arguing that in those days, in those places, people believed things like that, and that it made sense to those people, and there was a consensus. No one even bothered to step outside the box and say, oh, you mean you're not supposed to give money to the priestesses of whomever after you have sex with them? And now we think that's psychotic, or she's trying to pull a fast one. But in any case, there's a social determination, even a political determination, of what's true and what isn't, isn't
well,
there?
Well, it also runs contrary to what our human reason tells us. And one of the things that Jefferson was trying to tap into is that the two ideas point in the same direction. And if you get a claim that is so at odds with our human reason, which
right.
is supposed to be coming from the same source,
right.
then you start questioning the validity of the claim, and that maybe someone is in fact trying to pull a fast one.
Okay, but let's try to deal with that. There are religious people who the case I just raised isn't hypothetical. There are Muslim clergy people in countries who say day in and day out that God's will is the United States must be destroyed. And there are clergy people and politicians and voters in the United States who believe it's God's will that those people who want to destroy the United States must be destroyed, and they say it on television all the time. How can we tell which revelation from God, structured as a revelation from God that must be obeyed, is right?
Well, you have to look at the underlying merits of the claim, and this notion that there's a moral relativism, that neither claim can be proved or disproved, and therefore all claims are equally valid.
I'm just trying
or,
to...
or alternatively, that we have to just discount any such claims.
Right.
And look, you know, the one is you have to affirmatively go out and destroy another peaceful people who are not causing harm. Versus that you're going to reach out and try and prevent further attacks on that peace-loving people. I mean, those are hundreds.
I'm sorry. Which side were you talking about there?
Yeah, well, we were attacked, not the other way around. I mean, let's.
Well, okay, but if we have to, we have to define we, and we have to define attacked, and we have to define by whom.
Well, we as the United States, whether we are attacked, I think was pretty visibly obvious on September 11th.
Right.
If it had not been for a decade earlier with the USS Cole. You go over to a decade before that even still with the U.S.
Right.
barracks at Lebanon. I mean, we had been in a war for 20 years that we hadn't actually stepped up to acknowledge. And by whom? Osama bin Laden and his colleagues who, in this kind of radical fringe of the fundamentalist Islamic movement, who are using religion to try and sanction unlawful attacks against neighbors who have not attacked them.
Well, apart from consideration of that, President Bush on national television in front of 50 million people a few weeks ago said they attacked us. And John Kerry, who lost the election, said, just a minute here, Osama bin Laden ten days ago, admitted on national television that he ordered the attack on the World Trade Center. No doubt about that. He admitted he did it. He was proud of doing it. But the people who were attacked was the government of Iraq, which was a secular state that wasn't the same as Osama bin Laden. And so, if you're in a classroom, you know, and somebody this goes back as far as the tailor and the giants, right? He gets up in the tree and he throws rocks at both sides and they kill each other. If you're in a classroom and someone throws a spitball at a teacher and then smiles and then sort of nudges at the person next to me and then that person is expelled or whatever, that's an old trick.
Well, yeah, but let's be very clear what happened here. Saddam Hussein also attacked an innocent third-party nation with whom we had a treaty relationship with.
Right.
And at the end of the first Iraq War, he entered into a treaty rather than suffering a complete defeat at the time.
Right.
And for 10 years, he broke the terms of that treaty.
Right.
And so quite apart from the attacks on September 11th, we were authorized by his violation of the terms of the treaty to go finish the job that we were perfectly authorized to do on Kuwait's behalf back then.
Well, the United Nations never said that.
The United Nations said that in 27 different resolutions.
So the United States was entitled to, for example, right now as we're speaking, the United States Army and the Marines are attacking people in Fallujah.
Right.
And they're doing it on the basis, and they haven't gotten the UN's permission to do that.
They don't
need
the UN's permission to do that.
Well. All right.
What we did is topple a regime that had invaded a foreign country, entered into a peace treaty to end that conflict, and then violated the peace treaty.
Yes, but we weren't the foreign country that they invaded.
And we are now there at the invitation of the legitimate government of Iraq.
Government of Iraq was installed by the government of the United States.
Well, no, with elections planned for January.
All right, okay.
All right, now we're far afield.
We're very far afield, and I'm going to bring it back to that now. But I just wanted to try to tie them together in the point that the rationale or the motivation for the president to do what he is doing in Iraq is that he believes he's the instrument of a God who gives people
I think you're tricking yourself into buying somebody else's bullet points from pre-election.
All right.
I've not seen anything the president has said that believes he is, kind of the spokesman like Moses for God's will in the world on those questions.
All right.
I think rather as president of the United States, he's taken the actions to defend the United States.
All right.
I think you're reading. I mean, don't buy into those bullet points. The election's over.
All right. Let's do that. Back in Los Angeles, a certain group of people want to take the cross out of the seal. And how does David Horowitz get involved in this?
Well, David Horowitz is one of the taxpayers in Los Angeles County is concerned about wasting $700,000 of taxpayer funds. I mean, not exactly like we're flush with cash these days.
What's that money going to need to be spent for?
Well, they're spending it to remove the old seal and to put in the new seal.
So they're going to put duct tape over all the old crosses? What are they going to do?
They're going to take it out of all the marble. They're going to replace all the signs. They're going to replace all the decals on every police officer car. And every fire car, they're going to take the patches off every police uniform. They're going to put out new stationery with the new seal. They're going to change websites all over the county.
And that's going to cost about $700,000.
It's actually going to cost a lot more than that because they hadn't finished the estimate. But the current estimate is $700,000.
Okay. And tell us what David Horowitz's organization and he personally have asked in their suit.
Well, David Horowitz's organization is not a plaintiff in the suit, but David Horowitz as an individual taxpayer is.
Right.
And we've got about a dozen different individual taxpayers of every religious persuasion imaginable who have filed suit saying that one, spending the $700,000 now when there's an initiative pending that everybody expects is going to pass.
Okay, well, let's divert here into that initiative petition. Who's organizing it? What does it ask for, and where does it stand?
Well, the initiative, there are two ways to go about the initiative process. If you get 10% of the signatures from the last gubernatorial election in the state, you put an issue on the ballot at the next general election.
That's for the state or the county?
No, the county.
The votes for governor in the last. Does that mean the recall or
that's an issue that is, I think, open. But let's assume it's at the recall.
Okay. 10%
of
those people.
Total, it puts the issue to the voters on the next ballot.
And would that be March of 2005?
It would because the thing won't even be certified. The signature period doesn't even end until March 1st. So it'd probably be. Either the fall of 2005, if there's an election then, it may be in March or April of 2006, whenever that is.
But that's
the route that is the normal initiative route.
Right.
The other initiative route is if you get 20% of the signatures,
right.
You actually obligate the legislative body, in this case the Board of Supervisors, to adopt the initiative as an ordinance within 10 days, or for the Board of Supervisors then to call a special election that has to be held within 6 months.
So which would cost a lot more than $700,000.
It cost Supervisor Burke estimated at the Board of Supervisors hearing on September 14th that it would cost about $12 million.
Do you have a rough estimate of what 10 and 20% of the people who voted in the last gubernatorial election in the county of Los Angeles is?
Yeah, 20% is about 340,000 is my understanding.
340,000 people would need to sign it to do the second
approach. Second round.
That would mean it needed to be immediately enacted as an ordinance or a special election called.
That's right.
And who all is organizing this effort?
Well, a gentleman by the name of David Hernandez is the sponsor or the proponent of the initiative.
Right.
And he was also a candidate for Congress his last election.
And it's all registered. Was he also a candidate for mayor of the San Fernando Valley?
I don't know.
During the Valley secession election?
I don't know that.
But he ran for Congress and lost?
Yes.
Okay. And it's all registered and it is
it's
with the county.
It
is
was certified by the county recorder registrar on September 3rd.
Right.
And signatures are being collected.
Do you have any idea how many?
A motion that was offered by Supervisor Antonovich last Wednesday.
Right.
Is that in the first 3 weeks of the signature gathering period, over 25,000 signatures have already been collected.
And again, how many are needed to?
300 and some thousand.
And until when do the circulators have?
March
1st. And, okay. Do you expect that it'll get 10 or 20%?
I expect that it'll get 20%.
Okay. And whatever it does, then they just submit it to the...
They submit it to the county, and the county is obligated to adopt it as an ordinance, or if, you know, they could then call a special election as an alternative.
Okay. Now, that's completely... Politically, it's related, but legally, it's separate from the case you're bringing.
Well, it's related in this way. Without the initiative, I would be hard-pressed to say that the county is wasting money by settling a lawsuit a threatened lawsuit one way or the other. But with the initiative there, and when it succeeds, as everybody expects it's going to, it's going to force the county to put the 1957 Kenneth Hahn version of the original seal back in place. And so what we did, we said, let's hold off until... we see what happens with the initiative. And if it fails, then you can do what you want. We'll still have our constitutional claims, and we'll get to those in a minute. But why not wait until we see what the initiative is instead of rushing to start spending money now only to, 6 months from now, have to spend it back the other direction?
Was that the argument made in the proposal by Supervisor Antonovich?
That was the argument made by Supervisor Antonovich, failed 3-2. It was the argument we made before a state court judge last week. Who said, come back and see me after the initiative passes. I can't assume it's going to pass to give you your emergency relief right now.
Okay, to give us the whole picture then, let's focus on the timing and the status of the lawsuit you're bringing and what it's asking for.
Sure. Well, it's asking for the county to be enjoined from spending money that in the face of the initiative is going to have to be spent back the other direction.
Okay.
And it's also asking... for an order prohibiting the county from spending money under circumstances that we've had here that demonstrate that what we're really doing is targeting Christianity to be remove the references to Christianity from the actual historical founding elements of the county's history.
Okay. Now, in what court is this being heard?
Our case is being held in L.A. Superior Court.
Right.
There was a parallel case brought earlier in this summer that was heard and then dismissed over in federal court.
Oh, okay. And this is essentially the same case that failed?
No, the federal court claim only had a federal constitutional claim.
Oh, okay.
We have a federal constitutional claim, a state constitutional claim, and a taxpayer claim.
All right. And who's hearing the case?
The person that heard the emergency temporary restraining order request was Judge Yaffe, who's in the Writs and Receivers Department at L.A. County Superior Court. The person to whom the case has been assigned for the merits of the case is Judge McKay.
And when do you expect to go to court again?
Well, I don't know. The county has not yet answered our complaint. And when they do, then there are certain periods of discovery that open up and what have you.
Are they obligated to answer your complaint?
Well, yeah, they're obligated to answer or to file a motion to dismiss, and we haven't had either one of them.
And is there a time frame in which they need
to
do that?
Yeah, they're already at the time frame. We gave them an extension until November 17th.
So is that an important deadline for this?
Well, yeah, I'd be very interested to see what they're going to do.
Because so their choice is to either accede to your demand, file a motion to dismiss, or answer the charges.
And then we have discovery and, you know, get finalizing the evidence on what our claims are. If there are disputed facts, then we go to trial over those disputed facts.
Right,
and
now
the judge to make some determination about how the facts that are proved play out on what the legal rules are.
Right, now the county has already made a decision, passed an ordinance to do what you don't want them to do, right?
Yeah, they've already started spending money. September 14th, they adopted a new seal.
Right.
And 10 days ago, the county administrator came back with an order to all county department heads ordering implementation of the new seal, quote, effective immediately.
When was that order issued?
October 26th.
And who issued it?
The county chief administrative officer.
Okay. And that's where things now stand legally, absent any further initiative action or legal action,
that's
right?
That's correct.
And so it's possible that, did they give a time frame according to which they believe they're going to spend the money and do what they need to do?
Their time frame for certain things that are on replacement schedules,
right.
Like stationery and uniforms.
So everyone will get to use up the old stationery.
They use up the old stationery, although the order, the directive handed out was on new stationery with a new seal. So
they
immediately went out and got some new stationery made.
Right. I don't want to trivialize the whole thing. Can people be at legal risk if they use the old stationery?
Okay. Well, you know, apparently the ACLU is not too concerned about the phase-in,
right?
Because they've agreed to it. Now, what's interesting about that is one of the cases that suggests if you have a county seal where a religious symbol is the only symbol, or much more front and center than this one is,
right?
That if it's unconstitutional, you can't do a phase-in. It's got to be replaced immediately. So I think the county's proposal to phase in and the ACLU's agreement to it demonstrates that neither one of them think it's unconstitutional.
Because it's not so serious in their view, either of the ACLU or the Board of Supervisors, that it has to be done immediately and totally.
That's right.
But
I'll tell you who ought to be concerned.
Right.
Is that if this initiative passes and then it demonstrates all the money we're spending right now is wasted,
right.
The state taxpayer waste statute holds public officials personally liable for waste of taxpayer funds.
So that comes out to about $125,000 each.
Yeah, or if we go to a special election, now we're talking some real serious money.
All right. Let's.
By the way, I wouldn't say $125,000 each because it's only the three that voted for the thing. The other other two are not named in our suit, nor are they responsible for the unlawful waste.
Why don't we name some names here? The people who voted, there's a permanent 3-2 vote on this, isn't there?
So far, there is.
And who are the three who were voted to replace the old seal with the new one?
Yvonne Burke.
Right.
Gloria Molina.
Right.
And Zev Yaroslavsky.
And the two who have voted to retain the old seal.
Michael Antonovich and Don Kanabe, the chairman of the Board of Supervisors.
And is there any likelihood that any one of them is likely to change how they feel about this in the near future?
One would hope that if a court issued an order, they would change their mind.
Right. Okay. I located you because I was reading an article by Mr. Becker.
Yes.
In which he raises a further argument. And he says if it's so bad to have a cross on the county seal of Los Angeles, and then he goes into to trace the origins of the name of the city of Los Angeles back to the parish in which St. Francis of Assisi lived and, I guess, administrated. In other words, he's arguing that the name of the city of Los Angeles is a religious name, and if you're against a Latin cross in the seal of the county, in order to be logically consistent, you need to be opposed to the use of any religious symbolism or references in the name of the city and the county in which this is happening, as well as in other cities such as San Francisco, San Diego,
Sacramento, Santa Maria. You go up and down the line, and we could be in big trouble. Randy Newman's going to have to rewrite his song. Santa Monica Boulevard has to go.
All right. Now, how serious is Mr. Becker, do you think, about
this? What he's talking about, a little bit tongue in cheek,
right.
but he's talking about the principle that the ACLU's threat letter seems to have established and the county's accession to it. And that is that any religious reference by government is an unconstitutional establishment of religion. Now, the Supreme Court has never gone that far, but by bowing to that threat, the county seems to have subscribed to that view. And let me read you just the preamble of the California Constitution.
Please.
Because it's not just city names are going to have to go. Here's the preamble says, "We the people of California."
You're not talking about street names, are you?
Street names too. "We the people of California, grateful to Almighty God for our freedom,
right,
in order to secure and perpetuate its blessings, do establish this Constitution." I mean, that's the preamble of the California Constitution.
So does that mean that the California Constitution is unconstitutional?
Yeah, according to this latest version of what the Federal Establishment Clause means. It's preposterous, but that's where we have come in the ACLU's version of the First Amendment.
Okay, well, it's interesting that you use the word preposterous, because the ACLU, as far as I've seen, has used the word ridiculous to characterize Mr. Becker's argument that the religiously derived city names are at risk here.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, everybody understands the name of Los Angeles, and is much more prominent and knew it long before the county seal issue arose. But you know, the notion that there was even a cross in the county seal had escaped most people's attention. So I would think at the ACLU that if anything, the name of the city is even more troubling under their version of the Establishment Clause than the seal.
Okay, but it's they've said it isn't. They've said they're not going to do that.
I don't. Yeah, they may not go do that because they know how ludicrous it is.
Right.
But I don't know on what principle the claim that the cross and the county seal is unconstitutional, and the claim that you know our city of the angels is perfectly okay.
Okay.
I don't know. It may be that they think it's politically impossible to change the name, but I don't know under what legal principle it's okay when the cross and the seal was not.
Okay. Let's wrap up with the discussion of something that I think is an interesting point about all this. Is the argument made, and we're not talking specifically about the case, but just the general issue here, is the vehemence and attention that this is getting from both sides about whether it's an establishment of religion or not, is it possible?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. That's okay. Is it possible? In other words, why are both sides so concerned about this if it's not a religious issue? If it's merely a historical symbol that's being removed?
No, it's not merely a historical
okay.
symbol. That's the point.
Okay.
And I think Judge Otero over in the federal court action misunderstood.
I'm sorry, who?
Judge Otero,
okay.
who is the judge in the federal court action,
right.
misunderstood that.
What did he argue? What was argued to him? What did he say?
He believed that the plaintiffs in that case were arguing that it's only historical and not religious, and therefore it need not be removed. And then they were claiming that it demonstrated hostility toward religion by removing it.
Right.
And therefore, because of the contradiction inherent in their argument, he dismissed the case.
Okay, clear that up from your point of view.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look. I mean, it's historical. But it's a religious symbol that is permissible because it's historical.
It
accurately reflects that part of the history of this region was the founding of the region by Christian missionaries.
Let's say the transformation of the region. There were people who were here for tens of thousands of years.
There were people here for a lot of time before that, but it did not found a society in which the city grew up.
That's right.
Right?
Right. No city, no smog, no
none of that.
No
That's
gridlock
right.
in those days.
When you're talking about, you know, what led kind of to the city we know as Los Angeles,
right.
the county we know as Los Angeles now, the founding of it by religious missionaries is certainly a critical component of that history.
Yes.
And if you're going to put a symbol
That's why they
a
named
seal
it
out there that yeah. kind of acknowledges the key things of our history, and then to exclude from that the key thing of our history is because of its religious significance, is to demonstrate that hostility toward religion. We're going to excise from our history that component of it.
I see what you're saying. It's essentially, in an Orwellian sense, it would be going down the memory hole of saying, this never existed, it doesn't exist now.
Exactly, and we don't want it to exist because we think it's inappropriate.
Okay.
That's the hostility toward religion message that is sent by what went on this past summer.
So you believe that for a government body to exclude a religious symbol with historical significance while not excluding other historical symbols with...
While not excluding Perletta the cow, right?
Right.
Because of the dairy is significant.
What's her name?
Perletta.
How did she?
I don't know. She was a prize-winning cow.
A prize-winning cow. Okay.
Yeah, one of the L.A. County Fairs many, many years ago.
Okay. Now the argument's been raised that the new seal has a picture of the San Gabriel, an image of the San Gabriel Mission in it. Doesn't it?
It doesn't have an image of the mission.
What?
It has an image of a building
oh.
that has no cross, and to call that a mission is itself a manifestation of the hostility.
Okay.
It's okay to have this symbol as long as we excise anything religious about it.
It's my understanding that the image on the new seal has an image of the Mission San Gabriel founded by the Franciscans, under Juan Emperor Serra's direction, I'm sure.
Right.
That the view it reflects of that building, which still stands, doesn't have a cross.
No, that's right. They went out of their way to, you know, as one of the people testified at December 14th, to kind of get a picture of the back door so they could pretend that we had a nice mission symbol, but without any religious symbol to it.
So you're saying other views of the mission would have crosses. There are crosses on the mission.
It's possible to get a view of that mission without a cross. They went out of their way to do it, which, again, is, you know, that purposeful excising of you know, one of the key components of a mission, right?
Is what
in our view manifests the hostility toward religion.
Okay, before we go, let's try to get a more global view of this whole thing. What do you make of the fact that we've just spent, let me check my computer, 35 minutes talking about this, and whether the $700,000 is spent, or you're going to have legal fees, and the county's going to have legal fees, and this is going to go on. Why is it so important right now? This the seal has been this way since 1957, which is 48 years ago. Why are we you and I having this discussion? Why is the society having this discussion now, and why is it important?
Well, because I mean I think it's important, and people have gotten tired of the ACLU's suits trying to remove every reference to religion from our public square, and I think people have just had enough. And what you're trying to do is alter our nation's history. You're trying to excise from it a significant portion of that history that a lot of people, majority of the people, if I look at the latest election map, think is, you know, pretty important. And they're tired of their local elected officials just, you know, taking a powder to these threats of suit, and I think they're finally willing to do something about it. I mean, the number of people that have responded to me since we filed the suit, you know, asking what can we do to help, the number of people that are out there collecting signatures, on the initiative campaign. I think people have just had it in removing some kind of basic institutional foundations from our civil society.
So this is both a legal and a demographic dispute, then, isn't it? I mean,
well,
we've been discussing the nuances of the Establishment Clause, but in fact, the reason those principles existed long before this. Before now.
That's right. The fight, I mean, these are fights that have been going on for about 50 years.
Right.
The Supreme Court basically started taking a strict separationist view of the Establishment Clause that had not existed for the first 150 years of our nation's history.
It was the Madeleine Murray O'Hare case about taking religion out of the public school,
That's right.
a prayer out of the public schools.
That's right.
that got this going.
And when you look back at the founding and what they meant by that, it was, I can't force somebody to go to church and subscribe to a belief.
Right.
But the notion that government, and particularly state and local governments, couldn't rely on religion to kind of help foster the health, safety, welfare, and morals of the people. That was kind of the core government function at the state and local level.
Right.
I mean, this stuff now, this got to be strict separate. That's relatively new. And I think people have just finally had enough.
Okay, well, we're going to see what the people decide and what happens. Hopefully I'll be able to talk to, I hope I'll be able to talk to you on an ongoing basis here to get your point of view and the people that you're specifically representing and the people you speak for more largely, more generally than that, so we can have a rational, if not a revelatory, discussion of the whole thing.
Very good. I look forward to it.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.